Did
Yeah.
you have the symptoms? Like, so typically people have like heaviness in their legs, like hypersensitive, like moms and grandparents will typically, or even like people who have small pets will say, like, it hurts for my grandkid or child or pet to kind of like sit or run across my lap. Like, very painful, right? Like, things that
Wow.
we typically, don't have pain.
Mm-mm.
I commonly have patients come in and saying, like, I thought that was normal for like a kid to sit on my lap and have pain. It's like, no, that shouldn't be pain.
I.
Hey, it's Mel, and before we dive in, a quick note. The Cutting Edge podcast brings together a board-certified plastic surgeon, a licensed bariatric therapist, and your girl, a weight loss surgery patient. We share expert insights, real experiences, and honest conversations. While we cover important health topics, this podcast is for education and entertainment only and is not medical advice. Listening does not create a patient-provider relationship. Always talk to your own healthcare team about decisions regarding your health, treatment, or surgery.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy, and your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Welcome back to the Cutting Edge Podcast. And today is going to be fun because it's going to be a tongue twister. I already know it, because we're going to be talking about that annoyance that people get. It's lymphedema and lymphedema. I think I got it. And we have
Lipedema.
Miss Ashlyn and Dr. Badens to go over it, because they both deal with this with their patients all the time. And I got tons of questions for you. So welcome on. How do you feel about this topic today?
This is a good one, because a lot of my client, like, people probably don't understand the mental health aspect of these two conditions. They really mess with people's heads, because fluid weight gain obviously can fluctuate weight significantly up and down, and lipedema impacts women. Often isn't diagnosed. We'll have Dr. Bates talk more about that and like why it forms, but it. Neither of them look particularly great. So it could be a very frustrating mental health from a mental health standpoint. And particularly for lipedema, the treatment is liposuction. And guess what? Your insurance is likely not going to cover.
Well, there's no fucking way. Yeah, there's no way. So,
Or
Dr.
we'll
Bates.
have Dr. Bates talk more on the medical side. But it is interesting, because you don't really think of that as a mental health, the impacts of both of those conditions on your mental health.
Well, for sure. Yeah. And Dr. Bates, can you break down what each of them are?
Yeah. So, lipedema is, they're both abnormal accumulations of something, right? So, lipedema is an abnormal accumulation of fatty tissue, but it's not normal fat. Whereas lymphedema is an accumulation of fluid. And you can actually have both. Typically, if you have both, you would have had lipedema, where the tissue has grown so much or kind of spread so much that it started occluding your lymphatic vessels, right? So lymphedema is where the fluid that's, we have lymphatic vessels everywhere. That's the fluid that kind of fights infection. It's got, some of your white cells and things like that. And so that brings fluid back towards your heart. And if you have lymphedema, the body is unable to remove as much fluid as is going into an area. So typically you'll get in the extremities, and typically it's going to be one-sided. So you might have it in one leg, or one arm, whereas lipedema is going to affect both sides pretty symmetrically.
Which I
But
don't
yes,
know
one
is a
is
good thing or not, because I think I would rather have it be symmetrically
symmetric than not symmetric.
than
Yeah.
not symmetric. But also, that sounds like an annoyance as well.
Both
So,
suck.
yeah,
Both are
they
bad.
sound
Yes.
both suck. So how does this happen? Is this something we're born with? Is this something that we grow into? Is this environmental? Like.
It is so there's a lot of things we don't know about lipedema. We do know that there is some genetic component. It tends to only affect women. There's only a couple of cases that have been reported in men, and those are usually, I think the couple that I've read were, someone who had some cancer and was put on some hormone therapy and then developed lipedema. So no man, as far as been reported, just, developed it naturally. So there is a genetic component. It affects women, and it tends to flare during periods of hormonal changes, big hormonal changes, right? So for women, that's puberty, any pregnancies that they have, and then menopause. So those are
Lovely.
the The three big triggers. And typically, you know, and so Ashlyn, this is a question for you. I would say one of the biggest things I think women have a hard time wrapping their heads around until they know what it is that they have is that there's this kind of weight gain or this shape that they have, and then there's no explanation. Like a lot of, you know, patients I see tell me, I diet, I exercise, I do all the right things. I continue to gain weight. I continue to have big legs. And then they go to physicians, and I think this is a big part of the mental health component. They go to doctors, and doctors, not everyone knows about this condition, and they either tell them you're fat, you got to lose weight, go get bariatric surgery, and then kind of like shun them out the door. And that happens time and time again.
The crazy thing is it happened to me. So I had bariatric surgery. I lost a bunch of weight. I got out of PCOS. Hormonally had some kind of crisis that wasn't well understood. And then in my mind, I'm like, my legs went to shit. And it was like years after I had buried, I like could not figure out what was happening. And I went to the doctors and I was like, well, you know, my legs just went to shit. And I didn't think, and then finally I was so frustrated. I might have even been talking to my plastic surgeon about it, where I was just like, this is so stupid. I'm down all this weight. I'm on a GLP, you know, I'm like doing all the things I'm supposed to do and it won't go away. And she's like, well, it's not going to go away. It's Lipidine. And I'm like, oh, well, what is that? And I had it in my abdomen too, which is, I don't think it's as common.
It's most common in the lower extremities. It can be in the uppers. It can also be in the butt, and it can be in the abdomen as well.
Yeah. So as in the reason, one of the reasons that my abdomen had the shaping that it had was because of lipedema. And the reason that my legs looked fatter after surgery than they did before surgery is I think I had, because of the PCOS, I had more male hormones, like my more male hormones were more significant. And when we like dropped it significantly because we resolved PCOS, then I think that creeped in. There's no family history, but I don't have any, there's no PCOS. It doesn't really run in our family. Infertility doesn't run in our family. So like, I'm kind of the odd one out on a lot of those things. But that's one of the reasons why I did lipo first to debulk, because the feeling was we weren't going to, for my abdomen for the last three sets, the beginning of the last sets of surgeries that I had to fix my abdomen. Because she's like, you're never going to get the result you're looking for if we don't lipo. And I want to be able to lipo a large volume. So, you know, we did that. So
interesting. So you got it afterwards.
Yeah.
You probably always had it, right? So some women either don't know that they have it or don't show a lot of symptoms.
Weird. I had really, really, really muscular legs that were very thin. That's why people always thought I had Cushing's, because I looked like an apple on a toothpick.
Until
really tiny legs. And then after... But it wasn't until maybe I was 10 years out that it happened.
From bariatric surgery?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I gained some weight. It might have been too the pandemic. Like, I gained some weight. I had had a little bit of it, but I mean, it got much worse. Like, I could show you in photos, too, like, when it switched over. But I think it's when the insulin resistance came back. I had, there's definitely some kind of hormonal crisis.
Thinking about bariatric surgery, struggling after surgery, supporting someone you love through their journey? You don't have to navigate the emotional side of weight loss surgery alone. Find a bariatric therapist connects you to therapists who truly understand the bariatric experience. Whether you are a patient, a family member, or a healthcare provider looking for trusted referrals, support is just one click away. Visit bariatrictherapist.com to find a therapist and take the next step forward. Now back to the show.
Did you have the symptoms? Like, you know, so typically people have like heaviness in their legs, like hypersensitive, you know, like moms and grandparents will typically, or even like people who have small pets will say like, it hurts for my grandkid or child or pet to kind of like sit or run across my lap, like very painful, right? Like things that we typically, you know, don't have pain. I commonly have patients come in and saying like, I thought that was normal for like a kid to sit on my lap and have pain. I said, like, no, that shouldn't be painful.
I had had a doctor tell me he thought maybe it was fibromyalgia.
Mm, could be, yes. Like, very often confused with that.
I'm like, I don't think that's what it is. Because I had clients that have fibromyalgia. I mean, that was like a totally different beast than what I had.
It is very commonly confused. Like,
yeah, it was weird. Almost like needles. Like if something touched my leg. But it was weird. And even from my abdomen. But I think because of my connective tissue, I have kind of a lot of chronic pain. I just kind of ignore. But it was interesting. I'd never had anyone and I've always had it in my abdomen. For sure. Because I can see
it. I didn't realize it was painful.
She like showed me where it was. I can go back to even when I was going through puberty where I could see like, oh, that's it right there. And that's it right there.
So, well, and puberty triggers it.
Yeah, so. That's probably when it started.
And I would imagine like at least me looking back, like a lot of us women probably didn't think that we had any of these problems just because like, I know for me, cellulite kind of looks, you know, when you get bigger, you get like these little lumpy areas. And so you just think it's part of like, oh, it's just me being fat, not realizing, oh, it's actually a hormone thing. And we can not obviously cure it, but we can help do things for it. There is help.
Except you're going to have to pay for it because the medical aspect. Is there any insurance that'll cover?
So I was going to get to that. I'm glad you brought it back up. So I would say in the last 5 to 10 years, insurance companies have gotten a lot better about covering it. So United Healthcare was actually sued. They had a class action suit about maybe 3 years ago. They've started covering it. I would say the big ones like Aetna, Humana, United, Blue Cross.
Cigna.
Thanks. I was trying to think of the C.
Wonder if I can get my legs
generally have policies. Yeah, but it is not easy. So we treat lipedema. It is not easy to get covered. There's a lot of denials and appeals and, you know, lots of conservative management, just like any, you know, any.
But what's the alternative treatment for the fat one?
For lipedema. So, you know, we recommend conservative management includes things like compression garments, even before surgery, manual lymphatic drainage, diet and exercise is a big component of it. And then things like vibration plates, dry brushes, it's a lot of physical therapy, a lot of physical therapy techniques to help either.
Even for treat the fat one. I thought that was more for the fluid one.
Both. No. I'm strictly speaking lipedema here.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it is a connective tissue disorder. And so a lot of things that work on the tissue are physical, right? Like, or MLD or physical therapy, things like that. So.
Which is hard because I'm actually so paranoid about that vibration plate. Because if you have a blood clot and you sit on a vibration plate, you could break it off. That's why studied? They went out of popularity originally when they were popular in the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I think the interesting, so, you know, a few things that are interesting about lipedema, it can, so it's tissue that's resistant to diet and exercise, right? So, there has to be a clear distinction between what's lipedema tissue and then what's your normal fat. And everyone has normal fat, right? You can have lipedema and be overweight or have a higher BMI. So overweight by World Health Organization classifications or obese. But the interesting thing is that fat doesn't cause typical symptoms of people who have non-lipedema obesity, right? So you can have normal fat tissue and be overweight, be obese, but then that fat typically comes with things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, or insulin resistance. That's called metabolic syndrome. But you can have this lipedema tissue that causes you to, let's say, be overweight, otherwise be very healthy, or even obese, but not have those issues that come with non-lipedema
obesity.
Which now
I'm like well into the healthy BMI, and that is still there in my legs.
What is? Oh, the lipedema. Yeah.
And it's so interesting because like I had a scan and like my visceral fat is near nothing. And to me, that's the GLP-1, but my legs and still some parts of my abdomen, even the guy was like, wow, you've like no visceral fat, but your fat percentage is still pretty high. Thanks, dude.
Is that your DEXA scan?
Yeah. Have you ever had one of those just for like general interest? I mean,
I have. Yeah, it is very cool.
You know, there's I think there's good data that says that, like, and I'm not saying this about DEXA scans specifically, but, you know, like, there's people who go get, like, an MRI or a head-to-toe CT looking at things. There's no, like, data that shows that you live longer if you do that, because you end up typically catching things that don't mean anything, and you might get more tests.
That's why
and
I have not gotten one of the full body MRIs, even though I am a lover of data and information. But I know me, and I'm sure I've grown. Like, I have bone spur. I have all sorts of stuff that they're always like, "That's interesting." I would just find a whole bunch of things. They're like, "Interesting."
Yeah. Well, they say people die with tons of little baby tumors everywhere. There's nothing like. They're not cancerous. It's just your body doing stuff or bones. So,
be careful doing.
Yeah. Don't be doing it a bunch of times. Like, you can get obsessive.
Kardashian, when got it done, and I had clients that were like, maybe we should go get one of those full body.
Yeah, bad idea. Don't do it.
Kim Kardashian went and got one. I was like, I think Kim Kardashian got one because the company paid her to do it.
Yeah.
There's so much money to be made.
Yes. But those MRI machines are expensive. I mean, rightfully so, but still.
Plus, like, who wants to lay in? I can barely lay in the machine. I get chronic migraines, so, like, every couple of years, they make me go get an MRA, which is, like, this hour-and-a-half thing where they
Is that where it goes boom, boom, boom?
Oh, God, it's the worst one, and you have to go head first, so you have to be, like, deep in the MRI machine as it, like, cranks out bang, 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 for an hour and a half. I couldn't imagine doing that for a full body. They're just looking at my brain.
That's crazy. So is there, like, when it comes to lymphedema,
the fat one.
Mm-hmm. What are just some signs that aren't just the physical look of it to know that you might have this? Because you said there was pain involved, which I had no idea.
The classic pattern is the lower extremities, and the most, there's different types. The most common type is kind of like hips to knees. It can go all the way down to the ankles, so hips to ankles. It does not affect the feet, right? So that's one of the classic things that separates it from lymphedema. Lymphedema typically starts at the bottom of the foot, and then it kind of progresses upwards, whereas lipedema will never affect the foot. So you won't have a swollen foot or foot enlargement or anything like that. Again, the other big differentiator is lipedema is both feet or both arms, whereas lymphedema is typically only one. It can be on both, but typically lymphedema is going to affect one, right? Because lymphedema is an obstructed lymph channel or a problem with lymph channel, or you had cancer and you had some lymph nodes removed, which then leads to swelling of that extremity. So not typically going to affect both sides. And then, so you've got the kind of enlargement, and then you've got pain or hypersensitivity to tissue. So, you know, you kind of like pinch the fat. I should do it on my arm, I guess, because you can't see my legs. You pinch the fat and people say like that hurts, like kind of out of proportion to the pinch. And then easy bruising is another one. And then, you know, the other thing, because it's not fluid, if you elevate your limbs, the enlargement doesn't get better. Right. So with lymphedema, if you kick your feet up or elevate them above heart level, the swelling, the fluid naturally because of gravity starts to go away out of the foot or out of the limb. But with lipedema, you don't see that because it's not fluid.
Yeah. Because I have to do that with after I fly. I got to pull my legs up for a little bit because my left leg.
And that's
which I should be wearing compression. Dr. Bates has told me this several times. But that's the limb you injured. That is the limb I injured, yes.
Yeah, so very common, like people who've had cancer, even in the breast, right? Because sometimes you get lymph nodes taken out of the armpit that drain your extremity, your upper arm. Let's say you've had left breast cancer, you had some lymph nodes taken out of your left armpit. That arm is more likely or more susceptible to developing lymphedema.
Also, like, swelling. It doesn't go up and down. It just is.
Oh, it just is. Correct. Correct.
I see what you're saying, Ashlyn. Yeah, because the reason why I brought this up actually was because on one of the episodes, this gentleman, he's lost 500 pounds and he And he wants to do a thigh lift, but he's very nervous because he has the fat one. And lipedema.
Lipedema? A guy?
No. He has the fluid one.
The fluid one.
Lymphedema. Okay.
Yeah. Lymphedema. And he's just scared to go to some, like, he's doing research right now of, like, who should he go to? Because he realizes, like, that has to be a specialty of some sort. Like, not every plastic surgeon.
Can you injure it further and make it worse?
Yeah, you can.
See, yeah. So
That's interesting. I mean, good for him losing 500 pounds. I had a lady today, same thing, lost 500 pounds, but has lipedema. And so this was her third, I think, third stage surgery. But she'll need many more. I mean, when you lose that much weight, there's a lot of skin and you can't remove it all in one or two operations. This was her third round, but her first skin removal of probably three.
And does she have both?
She has lipedema. I think when you have that much tissue, you develop a little bit of lymphedema, maybe in like pockets. So if you look at someone sometimes with like a lot of these skin folds, right? The more weight that skin fold carries and kind of the more it hangs, it's tough for any fluid to get out. It's almost, I'm trying to think of a good analogy here, but if you can imagine like fluid going in and then it's more difficult to get out because it's this kind of like hanging ball
almost
of tissue.
Almost like a balloon.
Yes. So it almost, exactly, builds up like a balloon of fluid. And those people have to be very aggressive. We have to tell them, like, you've got to be very aggressive with your physical therapy, your compression. Typically, compression doesn't even really work well for them because it's like this hanging, you know, like you said, these balloons of water. So we typically recommend what's called a wrap for them. So they kind of take like what looks like an ACE bandage, and the physical therapists do this, and they wrap the entire extremity from the foot all the way up. But they do it in a very specific way to where the pressure is highest at the bottom and the lowest at the top. So to push the fluid back towards the heart. And people with lymph or lipedema who carry a lot of fluid, there can be a lot of weight in that extremity, water weight. So sometimes I see patients and I'm like, you if we just wrapped you, you'd probably lose like 10 pounds in a week because it's just all fluid.
It can be very hard for those clients. I've had two that I can think of off the top of my head. Both of them were on disability and really didn't want to be, but just couldn't. Like, their legs just became too heavy. If they stood up all day, it was just, and one of them tried to work desperately,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to work desperately, but just.
Yeah, it's very common.
Would fill up too much. And then she literally would not be able to get her leg into the car after work. She'd have to like lift it in and she did. I mean, she had all, and the other thing is when you're on disability, you often have crappy Medicare Advantage plans that like don't want to cover things, and you may only have one PT that knows anything about it, and they're not close, and because you need a specific kind of, you need a PT that knows what they're doing. Because I had a different client that was essentially injured by a PT that didn't know what they were doing, and so they were having like some kind of pump. Something.
Yeah, we do recommend lymphatic pumps.
Yeah, but I think if you're too aggressive,
how would you get injured from that?
Or you don't match it with something, then it can actually cause damage.
What is this pump? What does that even look like?
The lymphatic pumps?
Yeah.
No idea.
It almost looks like a, depending on the brand, there's two kind of big ones out there. But it almost looks like a, trying to think of how to describe it, like a bodysuit. Like one of the companies makes one that's one leg, and then the other one, I think now they both make ones that are like both legs. So both legs almost go into this like big inflatable type thing up to the waist. And then it's, people say they, you know, I mean, lipedema
like
patients sometimes can say it's painful. Like what?
Yeah.
Like snow pants. Yeah. And it kind of just pumps.
I've seen that before. Yeah. Okay. I've seen that before online.
Yeah. I've seen that before too. Okay.
That makes, and they make sense. Them for the upper extremities too. But yeah, the common ones are for the lower extremities. And you go in and there's different settings, different pressures, and you spend like, you know, 30 minutes to an hour in it typically per day.
So, and I feel for these people because like all of a sudden one day they'll be just down 10 pounds because they did all this stuff, and then it just comes back, right? Like it doesn't just stay away. Like,
so the lipedema, the lipedema is always going to get worse. It's called a progressive disease, right? So it doesn't ever get better by itself. You might alleviate the symptoms of the pain by doing some of the conservative treatment things we talked about. You might slow down the progression, but the track is always like upwards, right? It might be like here, it might be here. Surgery is really the only thing that
goes through menopause, because I don't want it to get worse.
Yeah. And you know, so some of the other things we've discovered, and again, we don't know everything about lipedema, like we don't know what causes it, but inflammation is bad for it too. So diet plays a big role in it. GLP-1s actually, depending on the type, have been found to be very good for inflammation and help patients.
Mine and my abdomen did not come back. And that was at the time when we did this, we both kind of looked at each other and are like, this is not a studied thing. This is not a known thing. But like, I started the GLP-1 around the time that we did the lipo. And we kind of both knew that this was not, a studied thing. But I wondered, you know, could we keep it away? And I've been on one consistently, so who knows? But I do think some of my other conditions also positively react to lower inflammation. So I don't know. It's an interesting, I don't know if there's any studies right now. I'd have to look specific to lipedema and a GLP-1. Are you looking that up now?
No, there. It's still
typing quickly. I was like, oh.
There's two, I think the GLP-1s are too recent to have any studies. I mean, one of the things, so we've actually got a couple of studies with lipedema right now. One of the things we want to understand is why, so like, where's the signal for it coming from, right? We know there's some hormonal component, but is it the area of the body that's create, is it like a local signal, right? Is the cell around, is the cell in, is of lipedema? Yeah. Or is it something far away, like something released from the brain or some other chemical that's going to that cell and telling it, hey, you know, you are going to be a problem cell. Because I've done a lot of fat transfer for patients with lipedema. And I mean, a lot of times you don't know if you're taking a regular fat cell or a lipedema cell. I mean, you can tell them apart, but when you do lipo, it's all just going into the same canister, right? And we've done like breast augmentations, we've done BBLs, and patients have never come back and said, hey, I now have lipedema in my breast, butt, whatever, you know, wherever we put the fat. So my theory is that it is not a local thing. It is a distant thing telling that kind of that milieu or that area of the body that this is where you're going to form lipedema. And it's very consistently in kind of specific areas. And one of the really interesting things that our research institute has found is that the fat in like the front of your arm is different from the fat in the back of your arm. The signals there are different. Yeah. So we're kind of looking at that and looking at how that's maybe different in a lipedema patient.
That is interesting, because I would assume that it would be the same. And that's the fact that even it's just the front to the back of your arm is different.
Mm-hmm. In a normal patient, yeah. So they studied that. That we know is different. So again, I think my theory would be just from my experience and from, you know, reading some of this research, my suspicion is that it's not the local cell that's the problem. It's the location or kind of the area it's in that's the problem. And once you take it out, you can put it elsewhere and it's going to behave like normal fat.
Well, and yeah, the GLP-1's been working like crazy on different stuff, because when I was talking with Jamie, the one that lost the 505 pounds, he uses a lot of his stuff for inflammation and for his rheumatoid arthritis. It's like helping other things now for him. It's not just weight loss anymore. So it's like pretty cool, because he had the DS and did GLP-1s. But he had
to lose that much weight. I'm not
saying. Right. Like you need that double, because like you'll lose. It's always in chunks. So like the GLP-1, it was 200 pounds and the other was the weight, the DS, and that dropped him in more like 250 or whatever that total is. So it's like crazy what it can do now.
Clients that it has impacted their mental health. And one client in particular keeps her out of mania and psychosis. We don't know why.
Well, it's helping the addiction part of our brain. So it's...
Yes. Alcohol.
I've wondered about this, and I know we're going on a squirrel moment, but I have no urge to drink ever.
Yep.
Even when there's alcohol around me, I could care less. Like, I have no urge.
Unintentional. Even in people who don't have problematic drinking and people who have problematic drinking, that's been a really interesting... I had a client that came in for problematic drinking. We worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, worked on it. Has a good reason for problematic drinking. And started GLP-1 as a side thing. And he was trying to get down for sleep apnea and came in. I think he was on like 2-3 weeks and he was like, I don't want to drink anymore. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a thing. We don't exactly know why. Now there's actual studies in it. But so it's pretty crazy. Yeah. Kind of makes sense. Even the psychosis mania one, that has to do with dopamine, and alcohol also has to do with dopamine. So, I mean, kind of all checks. The most interesting one to me is there's no current treatment for problematic repetitive action addictions. So that's gambling, video games, like anything repetitive action. We don't have anything for that.
I never heard it in that way before.
It's just an all-inclusive because most people just think of gambling, but nowadays we're also talking gaming.
Well, because there's gambling within gaming. Like, it's whether they want to admit it or not.
Yes.
Like, when your son comes up to you and goes, I'm pretty sure I'm basically gambling in this Call of Duty game, then yeah. Then I'm like, if my own son goes, then there is, and there really
is. Or even in Roadblocks, like some of the children's ones, there's gambling, which is weird to me, but not because I understand the psychology.
What is it?
What?
What is it? Gaming or gambling?
Both. All of it. Repetitive action.
Oh, repetitive actions. Okay.
Yeah, we're learning about it.
Repetitive action addiction is anything you do over and over and over again. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's helping with people that have OCD. So then I was like, well, that checks.
It probably does, knowing how OCD works. You know, I have to check that one out. But yeah, it is fascinating stuff. Also, like what they're looking at in Alzheimer's and like memory stuff. I mean, that's crazy.
I'm not up to date on the Alzheimer's stuff.
Well, I'll just send you, there's one in particular. The doctor put himself on it after he like noticed in his patients. He's
an improvement in mental cognition or something.
That and probably, he was worried about his own family history. I want to say he was studying dementia and Alzheimer's. I'll send it to you. It was really interesting. Actually, a family member sent it to me and was like, have you heard this?
Well, yeah, and they've linked sugar to Alzheimer's, like, a couple of years ago. I think actually more than that, but that's, like, a whole thing. Because it fucks up your frontal lobe, clogs it.
Was there truth to that? Or was that, like, a...
I think it's kind of, like, what came first. So if you had a deficiency and then the sugar, like, fed that deficiency, a deficiency from a sense of, like, dopamine or, like, feeling good or, like, going on in your life, isolation. I think that's the hardest part with a lot of these things is how do we pull apart, especially in mental health, because, you know, your environment is such an impact or, like, I think of it, like, you have a pretty good reason to be depressed, you know, like, you know, you're a shit magnet for bad things happening, like, you might have a good reason to be depressed versus a more like genetic or biological form of depression where you'll tell me like, my life's really good, but I still don't feel like there's different levels of that. So it is hard to pull that apart.
Well, does Alzheimer's count as a mental health issue?
We think that's more neurological.
Right? Yeah.
In the family, I think of that as like Parkinson's and dementia and Alzheimer's, because they do have to do with dope. I mean, they do have to do with the same chemicals that we think of in mental health. But like, I wouldn't treat them as a mental health practitioner. Sometimes in early dementia, we still see clients or early Parkinson's, but yeah, not that would be more neurological or neuropsych.
Interesting. So sorry, we got way off topic. Back to getting surgery if you have one of these. If you want plastics, can you get plastics if you have either of these? And if so, like, how does this work? Is it a longer surgeries because of this? Does it cost more because this is an issue? Like,
great question. So we can talk about lymphedema a little bit since we're talking about both. But lymphedema, typically you would want to treat that first. So, you know, you'd see a lymphedema specialist, which is typically not a body contouring specialist. If someone's doing both, they're probably a specialist in neither or maybe one of them. But typically, like, you're not going to be a specialist in both of those types of procedures. Lymphedema surgery would typically involve one. There's kind of three main surgeries. One is you know, small, not super small, not like lipo incisions, but small incisions in the extremity where you, you know, the surgeon goes in and connects the bad lymph vessels where it might still be good, like where very close to your foot or your hand, for example, and they connect it to a vein. And so that way it's bypassing the bad lymphatic vessel, and you take the good part and you connect it here, and now it's just draining into a vein.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's one, you know, one option. Second option is you take a packet of like lymph nodes from a normal extremity, and typically you go to the opposite side. So let's say it's your left arm, you go to the right leg, you take a little packet of lymph nodes, and you transfer it into the bad extremity, and typically they will then start kind of working to help drain that area. And the last option is actually liposuction. If there's a lot of fluid, typically you can get some adipose or fatty tissue as well. You know, and again, with all these options, the biggest thing is just we call it arm decongestion or extremity decongestion. That's where you wrap it and you want to get the fluid out, because none of these treatments are good if it's full of fluid. If you have someone who comes in and their arm is like this big, and you make an incision, you're just going to get a bunch of water, right, or fluid. But liposuction, after you've decongested the arm, if there's some fat tissue behind, you can then go back and suck the fat out. So those are the three treatments for lymphedema. For lipedema, it's a little bit easier. Typically, if it's lipedema without lymphedema, so you just have the fatty accumulation, you don't have the fluid, it's really one of two surgeries. It's liposuction to get the bad fat out, and then skin removal to remove the loose skin if you get that after the, you know, either you've had it from weight loss or you have it as a result of removing so much fat that now you have loose skin.
So you do that one.
I do that one, correct.
You do that one, yeah. Okay, very cool. Because it seems like I've met so many women that don't know that they have this, because now I'm like picturing friends and family, that lower section. And I'm like, these poor ladies, because it is a lady thing. And the fact that, yeah, now we have to get lipo, like basically lipo is the way to go.
Lipo is the way to go. I think, you know, people do have to keep in mind, and this is something, there's a lot of misinformation on lipedema. I think we were just talking kind of before we went on air. I've done a couple of interviews in the last month, and one of the things I try to stress to these reporters putting out these stories, there's a lot of misinformation on lipedema. There's a lot of like forums and groups where people go and chat and write stuff. So one of the things I hear a lot is, well, I have lipedema and I can't lose weight. And that's not necessarily true. So, you know, we mentioned earlier, lipedema is resistant to diet and exercise and traditional weight loss methods. But some women, a lot of women, have lipedema with that non-lipedema obesity we talked about earlier. So they have the lipedema, the abnormal, unhealthy tissue, but they can also have normal fatty tissue. If your BMI is 45, 50, 55, you know, plus, you probably have some non-lipedema obesity. And so a lot of them come in and they've kind of almost just like resigned to the fact that I have lipedema, my BMI is 70 and I can't lose weight. That's not true. I mean, there's lots of studies that have shown if your BMI is over 40 to 45, even with lipedema, you have some normal fat and you could benefit from bariatric surgery.
Yeah. You would just have to be like, logically, there's got to be some of that fat and it can't all be bad.
Correct.
And I've lost quite a bit with the bariatric surgery. I mean, so clearly, like, not all of my fat was
correct. Yeah. So you had a mix. Yeah. It's common to have both, right? Again, that lipedema fat is not the one that causes the unhealthy things like the high blood pressure, cholesterol. But if your BMI is 40 plus, I don't want to generalize, but I would say almost always you have some non-lipedema fat that, you know, you can burn, lose somehow. You don't have to have surgery, but diet and exercise isn't going to hurt you. It's going to help you. So that's number one. The other thing I like patients to understand is that this is a, you know, we don't know everything about this disease, right? Like we were just talking about. And so going in and taking the bad fat out it's not a cure. You know, number one, unless someone went in and like just took everything out between the skin and the muscle, which is not something I ever recommend, there's no way you can get all of it out. It's a treatment. Surgery is a treatment. It's not a cure. So, you know, it's funny. I had this conversation with a patient a few months ago. We had done, I think we were like on the third or fourth round, and she was coming up on her next surgery. And I'm examining her and I'm like, you don't look much different from when you and I first met. And then I went back and started like looking at her chart. And we had, I'd done three surgeries at that point. And I look at her chart, and this has happened more than once, but this is kind of a good story. I think I'd removed the total of what, between like, we'd done like a fleur-de-lis and we had done her thighs and done a couple of debulkings. And I'd removed, if you counted everything up, about 30 pounds of tissue. Okay. And then I went back and looked at her initial weight before we had met. I mean, before we had operated on her, she was now 40 pounds heavier, right? So we've taken 30 pounds off and she weighs, or she's 10 pounds more. So basically she's gained that 30.
This one gets the poor unfortunate soul. Because like, damn, that sucks. Yeah.
Some of it might have been covered by insurance. But the thing is like, you know, at that point, you've got to take a step back. And say, okay.
How you know Dr. Bates is good? Because he didn't just keep taking her money.
Yeah. Well, I did tell her that. I was like, I can keep doing this, but you probably should, like, we got to look at something else here.
So did it, was it coming back?
No, I think this was a very, you know, a person who, I don't know if she was like, oh, well, I'm 10 pounds lighter. I'm going to go back to eating and, you know, eating unhealthy. And it's a tough conversation to have, but I think when I put the numbers in front of her, I was like, you know, and I'll just make some dates up. But like in 2022, when we met, you were 180 and I took 10 pounds off. And then we took another, and I was like, you should be at like 150, but you're at 190. Like something's not adding up here. And she's like, yeah, you're right. And they kind of admit like, yeah, I've not been eating healthy lately. I had surgery. I figured, you know, so I've had it actually happen like 3 or 4 times in my career. And it's not an easy or fun conversation to have, but I think you got to sit down and tell a patient like, you need to see a nutritionist or someone else because, like, you're not making the lifestyle changes. Like, this is not weight liposuction is not weight loss surgery, right? So, and same with lipedema, it's a thing you're going to live with forever. So, my job is not just to do lipo and kind of like send you out the door and then you gain 10 pounds and you come back and I'm going to do lipo again. My job is to help you like live with this forever. So, that's when we have to send them out to like a nutritionist or dietitian or someone to help them kind of like figure out a way to lose the weight and keep it off.
And I would imagine, too, from a mental health standpoint, you're living probably with a lot of shame surrounding your body because oftentimes with lipedema, the fat one, you may not look like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And so if you're kind of carrying that around, or maybe you got negative feedback from the opposite sex or ex-boyfriend or like, and you're kind of carrying that around and you're like, oh, good, I'm going to go get it fixed. I'm going to look better. I'm going to feel better. And maybe you don't. And now you're kind of stuck in this loop. And so, you know, maybe you're eating food for comfort, or you're like, mm-hmm. Well, I'll be single. So I'm just forever. So whatever, I'm going to go out and enjoy food every night. You know, I'm going to eat out every night, whatever the cycle, again, it may not just be behavioral. There may also be a mental health test, like a cognitive part of that too.
Yeah. But the big picture is this is a condition you're going to live with forever, and it sucks, but it's the reality. And surgery is not the last step. It's just a step. Kind of like bariatric surgery, right? I mean, it's if you go back to old habits or you drink a bunch of smoothies every day, you can easily gain the weight back. So it's a tool. It's an option, but you've got to also like make some changes in your life to keep going in the right direction. So,
yeah. And you don't have to do it overnight either. I think that's mm-hmm. really hard for us all or nothing people. And so it's like, you don't, it can just be little tiny tweaks through your day. Like even for me, these last 3 days, I've gone outside, I've gone on little walks. And it's just because I'm like, okay, we just need to do a little bit different every day.
And again, reiterating that like mental health aspect of, I think what happens for a lot of people, particularly when they're preparing for plastics or bariatric surgery, is they get on the perfect bus where they're going to eat perfect and exercise, like everything's going to be perfect. And then the problem with doing that is you could fall off the cliff. So I always said, like, I want you to do things that you could do forever. Could you work out in a gym 2 hours a day forever? Probably not.
Absolutely not.
That probably shouldn't be our goal. But can you get out and walk?
What are those perfect patients, Ashlyn? I feel like my patients, like, I see them, they've worked hard to get to a weight. And then I'm like, okay, you're good for surgery. And then, like, you know, 3 months later, when it's their surgery day, they've gained, like, 10 or 15 pounds.
One of the most common things that I see after plastics is weight gain and dissatisfaction with that weight gain. It was interesting. I have a client who's about to have surgery, I think, in July. And we were just, she was like, I think I'm going to sign at Busy Bariatrics, ironically enough. I think I'm going to sign up. There's an online Rob.
Well, yeah, it's summer camp, guys. I actually have links all up in my bios and all the things because I love Dad Rob and Busy Bariatrics. So he has like 24 fucking professionals on there and they're helping you with all sorts of stuff. So it's pretty
this
cool.
This is my off year. So I'll be back next year.
That's right. She's on there every other year.
Which is fine. I understand. But I think that we were talking about it and I'm like, I actually think that's a good plan. More just from an accountability to be like, hey, what are we doing? I think also kind of coupled with that, that idea of like, I think I'm going to wake up from surgery. It's interesting. I had a random friend who has no connection to bariatrics or anything who had plastic surgery recently. And my husband was talking to her husband. And so my husband's like, she has a podcast about that. If your wife wants to talk to her about it.
Well, we talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so her and I were talking and I'm like, did anyone tell you that swelling takes a while and you're not going? She was like, not really. I mean, they did, but I didn't really know what that, because I think at this point, maybe she's like a month out. She's like, when is this going to go away? I'm like, it's going to take a while.
Takes a while. I know, because Jamie,
I'm hoping she wasn't our patient, because we tell everyone you're going to have swelling for weeks.
No, and with Jamie,
she talked to me before she had it. I'm like, you should talk to me before you had it. We told you all the good people. I think people outside of this realm don't put all the pieces together of what my job is and what I've been through, and even though I talk about it. But
you've been through so much. So it's like, it is like a puzzle piece, but that's fine.
When
that's
it's like, and I'm heavily embedded in it now. So, like, yeah. I know who you should probably go to. And and hers was just a mommy makeover. But I'm like, I didn't even recognize the name of the person that she went to. I knew the partner, but I didn't know him. And I was like, well, that's interesting.
In your game. But yeah, because even with Jamie, he's 26 days out, has two drains left. But he has more swelling on his lower extremities.
Wait, so he had the surgery?
He did the penectomy, that word, with an FDL. So he only got tummy done. And so, like, he's thinking about getting his thighs done. He's very nervous, though, because, like, he's like, what do I do? Like, if we do thighs, then, like, is the water going to go straight to my heart? Like, what, are we going to have problems? Like,
just
he's like, how does this work? So, yeah, how would it work for him?
I don't know. You said he's, like, 3 weeks out. So, I mean, he may have already experienced this, but I would tell him sometimes, like, a surgery on the belly because you've got the lymph nodes in the groin. Hopefully the surgeon didn't remove any of those. But even then, with like an abdominoplasty or paniculectomy, you can get swelling in the lower extremities. So hopefully he's got some wraps or some good compression garments or something for his legs. Just FYI.
And he's local to us. So tell him he can go see Mary at the custom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Because he's actually here, so he can utilize that service. And she specifically has lymphedema. Like part of her business is not even weight loss. It's for lymphedema.
Actually, then we'll put that one. We'll put her information below, but we'll get that information. Yeah, I'll send that to him because I don't think he's wearing any on the lower half. So there's that.
So if he has lymphedema, he should probably get plugged in with a lymphedema surgeon.
So I know he does, like, he was actually late to our episode because he was getting the lymphatic massage.
Done. Okay.
Yeah. So I know he does that 3 times a week.
No, but I meant a lymphatic surgeon. So like we talked about the 3 surgeries. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To see what his options are. He might need testing, you know, so for lymphedema, you can do like some dye tests. You inject some dye in the hand or the foot, and then you do like X-ray image. It's not really X-ray. We do images to see where the dye is traveling.
So then you can see if it gets stuck in like the balloon.
Correct. Or,
like,
you can see where the problem is. If it's getting stuck, is it making it to the knee? Is it not going past the foot? Is it making it halfway up? And then there's another type of dye study similarly where you can look at it more closely in a different way and see, you know, do I have a good channel that I can connect to if I'm going to do the, you know, depending on the surgery you're going to do.
What kind of doctor is that?
Usually it's plastic surgeon. So, like, Dr. Klein in our office is a lymphatic surgeon. So, he went to Germany and studied, like, the techniques that they use there. And he started at Advent Health, our lymphatic center of excellence, which is, I think there's only like less than 15 in the country. So he's a great lymphatic surgeon. His vision is to build this lymphatic center in Orlando. I'd suggest you start there.
So like, come on down.
Yeah.
Come on down.
Get all your stuff fixed, y'all. No, let's not promote Disney. They don't need any more promotions. Those guys get money hand over fist all day, every day. Go hang out at some mom and pop area.
You know what? Interesting. Totally unrelated to our podcast, but because you mentioned Disney, I read this interesting article the other day. It said that tourists, like visitors to Orlando, had gone up 2% in 2025 from 2024. So up 2%. But visitors to Disney had gone down 1%.
I think that's hilarious. Universal Epic that opened up.
You think so? I think it's their pricing. I mean, their pricing is just like you pay more and like Lightning Lane, whatever. I don't go very.
I think they're going to Universal instead. Because I've had clients that like live here. And have been going to Disney less. I think also Disney pissed people off when they started like charging for parking, like all these tiny
things. You pay like, more and get less.
It's $199 is a lot, actually, for the day, and I still got to pay for parking, and it's not really close. I mean, like Universal, where you pay to be like right up front. Like I get it. But
that makes sense.
And it's really like a 3% loss, right? Because it's you're getting 1% more visitors to the state. Or sorry, 2% more to the city, but 1% less into the parks. So I think basically the conclusion was that people are coming to Orlando more, but visiting Disney less.
Yeah, which is great. Because I'm like, okay, Universal, where else? I guess they could be going to Legoland if they're...
Legoland, SeaWorld. I mean, there's so many, and there's other things other than the parks, right? We have some good museums, the Science Center. There's lots of stuff to do here. If
anyone comes down, the Science Center is very fun.
Crayola World. My kids love that, but they're younger. I mean, if you're like a teenager, that's probably not as fun.
Wait, there's Crayola World?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's cheap.
My girls love that.
Where is that? Like an outing because you get to make your own crayon at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I kind of want... I'm like a little kid at heart.
Yes, I made the coolest like tie-dye crayon.
See, I would rather do that than go to Disney all day long.
Well, and it's indoors. It's very busy in the summer.
When the kids get out of school, you don't want to go.
So we'll have to go when I come out when it's like wintery time.
Yeah, we had the Sanford Zoo. Okay, did you guys hear about all the way out in Oregon about the Sloth World that got all the sloths and they all died. Mm-hmm.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. So, motherfuckers. There was like 70 sloths.
Yeah.
I don't think it was that many, but it was a lot. It was like 30 or 40.
The zoo has the sloths now, unfortunately. Two of them got out of ICU today. I like follow it daily. I think more had a bunch died.
So bad.
But in the near future, we are going to have one hell of a collection of sloths at the zoo. I always preface people, if you are from places that have amazing zoo, this is not that.
No, correct.
If you want to go to a zoo, just go to San Diego. Zoo.
You know, it's funny you say San Diego, which was where the bariatric meet was a couple of years ago, and my wife and kids were there with me, and they went to the zoo the day I was speaking. She and they were very underwhelmed.
Really?
I didn't go, so I can't speak, but she was like, we walked around for hours and there just really weren't that many. Like, for all the talk, maybe it was just so hyped up.
I always tell people with the Sanford Zoo, like the Orlando Zoo in Sanford, it is a wonderful day to walk around. I love otters. There are otters, and you can watch the otters. We have some, but if you come from a place that has an amazing zoo, this ain't it.
Yeah, I know. For the very first retreat, it was in San Diego, and Dylan came with me. So it was Dylan and Eric, and I told them they could not go without me. I was like, once we were done, then we went. And that was a blast. I had a great old time.
Really?
Like, huh. It's a lot of walking, but like everywhere we went, there wasn't a problem. I got to see all the things. So
maybe the animals were sleeping that day. I don't know.
We had a little nap aquarium. And then I went to SeaWorld and I was like, your penguins need more space. We need more penguin space. Everything needs more space.
At SeaWorld or at the aquarium?
At SeaWorld. Because at the Shedd Aquarium, the penguins have like four times the space. And you can sit and watch them and it doesn't stink. Oh my word, where the penguins are at SeaWorld.
Normally they smell awful.
My eyes watered. Oh my God. Because I love penguins. I just want to stand there and watch the penguins. There's no seats to, because in the Shedd Aquarium, you can like sit. There's old benches and stuff. And you can sit and watch the penguins. And I think they have like three different kinds.
That's how it is in Oregon. You can sit and watch.
Oregon has an amazing aquarium. We went to the aquarium in Oregon and that they have this giant octopus. He was crazy. And if you can go when they're feeding him.
Dude, octopus, I know we're really on tangent right now, but I just watched the show, the movie called Creatures or Brighton Creatures with Sally Field. And is about like she is the it's an aquarium and she cleans everything. Like she's at nighttime and she talks to this octopus. She just talks to him. And you can tell he's actually understanding her. And in my head, I'm like, oh, octopus are just aliens. Like that's just they're just aliens in the ocean. Like that's what that is. Sorry.
They're very, very smart.
They are, because they would get out and go places, and then it gets stuck if it couldn't go somewhere, and it's like, you have 5 minutes to get back in the water, or whatever like, it is.
I was always shocked. The one in Oregon, he's in an open tank.
Yeah, he can get out.
He could get out.
If he really wants to. It's kind of wild.
But
anyways, back to the ranch. Is there anything else that you two want to add besides consult your doctor?
I think there's something to say besides that. Like, I think one, like, talk to your therapist on this one to try to, you know, I think it's okay to feel like a mental health aspect of this condition. It's very frustrating. It's not well known. You may have gotten a lot of negative feedback around it being your fault, or it's something very solvable if you just did XYZ and it's actually the opposite of that. So that could definitely bring on some feelings about that. So
big feelings. For sure.
Talk to your therapist this time. And,
I love it.
And find a specialist that actually does. You know, when you're looking for medical care on that, like look for medical professionals that have extensive. Ideally, this is all they do. But I'll leave the medical part to Dr. Bates.
I was hoping you were going to say look for a board certified plastic surgeon.
All they do is this.
That's a big, but people have to be careful if you're, hopefully you're listening this far into the podcast. If you think you have lipedema or know you have lipedema, let's go back. If you think you have it, but you're not sure, a very good place to start is in a vascular doctor's office, vascular medicine or vascular surgeon. They are very knowledgeable about it in general. Most patients get diagnosed in a vascular doctor's office. Primary care is unfortunately usually don't know about it and aren't very helpful. And even plastic surgeons, unless they treat it or are familiar with it, may not be able to help you. So I'd start in a vascular doctor's office. Once you have a diagnosis or if you've been diagnosed, be very careful because a lot of non-plastic surgeons treat this. You know, we've talked about this before, but lipedema specifically is something that like there's dermatologists, there's internal medicine doctors, there's gynecologists, and I've seen the work from all of them when I do revisions, it is not great. So be careful for someone who's telling you like, yes, I treat lipedema. Make sure you ask for their credentials. There are many doctors all around the country who kind of prey on lipedema patients and they'll call themselves lipedema experts, but they're not plastic surgeons. So.
Oh, lovely.
Always check your credentials.
There's so... I know, but I never thought in 2026 that we would have to be checking credentials so much, though. Like, I remember, and I know this is a problem for the older generation, too, because they want to believe what is written is Bible, you know? And so, like, when someone is saying that they are this, they want to believe that, especially, you know, if they've been around a long time, they maybe published some articles on things, and so it makes them look so legit, but they really aren't in this area. Like they're legit in other things, it's just this area.
Would you be able to publish like in a peer reviewed journal if you were not a board certified plastic surgeon on that?
You could. Yeah, you could.
Okay, so that's not
you probably wouldn't be able to publish in like our journal, like a non plastic surgeon I should know this for 100% certainty because I review for both our big journals. I'm pretty sure you cannot submit an article if you're not a plastic surgeon or have one on. They don't all have to be plastic surgeons. Sometimes we have students. Sometimes we collaborate with other fields. But like an internal medicine doctor, I believe by themselves would not be able to submit a paper to like our two big journals.
That's good.
But the better way to check is the website. I think I mentioned it before. Yeah. It's certificationmatters.com. And that will, if you look up the doctor, whatever board they're certified by, and hopefully they're certified by something, it should come up.
Is there any specific certification for lymphedema?
Lymphedema is typically going to be plastic surgery as well. Yeah.
Mm-mm. See, and I would have never have guessed that it was part of that world.
I actually thought, honestly, I thought it was a part of vascular.
Me too. I thought it was vascular, not.
But yeah, lymphatics are actually like super, it can be like super microsurgery. So not just like transplanting tissue. Actually, one of the cool things we're getting, we should be getting it any day now, is this new it's a microscope robot. This thing is like millions of dollars, but, and I don't know how many hospitals in the country have one, but we should be getting one soon. I would not use it because I do super large incisions. But it's a really, I got to try it out a few years ago when they were bringing it to the US. It's a Swiss company, I think. Don't quote me. It's European, maybe Italian. And when they were first bringing it to the US, we got to try it out. It's a micro robot, but really what it is, just like the other robots, not actually like doing the work. But what it does is because these are such fine, small movements, and even if like as a surgeon, I don't have a tremor, but even like a little bit of a shake, right, can make a big difference. And so it takes movements and kind of makes them microscopic. So, and you can actually tweak this. So I might want this movement of my hand to become like this movement on the needle, or I might want this movement of my hand to become, and you can, so you can tweak that within a certain range, and it's really, really cool. And it's got like this screen you're looking through, and
with Dr. Klein in the Advent Health Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Advent Health Orlando. Yeah. Wow, it should be coming like really any day now. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
I'm sure Advent Health will let us know.
I love it. It's really cool just to know like the sciences, you know, are like really upping their game and fine tuning as much as they can. Cause like, I didn't even know some of this stuff existed until these kind of last few years. So it's pretty.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So lymphatic work can be like, we're talking like a millimeter, right? Like the, you know, it's like two pieces of paper together. When you're working on those vessels. So not a, you know, vascular guys are usually working on like 5 millimeters, like half, you know, fifth of an inch, let's say. For microsurgery, it's typically 2 to 3 millimeters, and for lymphatic, which is super microsurgery, it's like I said, a millimeter or less.
So a 1.5 centimeter is pretty big then in that kind of world.
1.5 is like half, a little bit more than half an inch. Yes, that's big.
Yeah, your eyes showed up through me first. I was like, oh, that is. And I just make the joke.
You were
just
like
because...
half an inch. What's...
Well, no, like 1.5 centimeters. Is that an...
Is a little more than half an inch. I'm just converting it to inches for people who may not be familiar with centimeters.
Yeah, so like...
I learned in centimeters. I grew up in Montreal, so everything I learned in centimeters... When I tell someone like, oh, it's 3 centimeters, they look at me like, you know, like I have 3 heads.
It's fair. Yeah. Okay, so 1.5 is a half an inch. So holy shit, that is a gash. I only say this just because a doctor has hit an iliac vein by 1.5 centimeters and was like, they said nicked it, and that is not a nick. So, but anyways, that concludes our show, guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, I'm sorry how giggly and goofy we are, but I love it. And make sure to follow us on all the social medias, and make sure you make any comments below, whether that is on Instagram or on YouTube, letting us know your thoughts and if you have any questions or concerns. But we are all here for you. So we will see you next week. Have a great week, guys.